Hi, folks. This week is the first part of a 2-episode series about founder suicide. And I realize that that is a pretty big, heavy topic and one that may be outside of the realm of most of the podcasts that you listen to. But it's something that Rob and I think that it's pretty important to talk about publicly and talk about on the podcast. The startup community has been shaken by suicides of some pretty significant founders, like Aaron Schwartz, like Jody Sherman, and there are several others. So our podcast is very much about how to live well, and part of that means talking about what happens when folks are really not doing well. So the first part of the 2-part series is an interview with Brian Castle. Brian is a web designer and founder of a series of bootstrapping business products. He blogs at castjam.com and is the co-host of bootstrappedweb.com. And he's talking with me today about 6 weeks after the suicide of Clint Warren, Brian's friend and office mate. So in the conversation that you're going to hear today, Brian and I are talking about who Clint was, what it has meant to Brian and to Clint's other friends for Clint to have died in this way. So this is the real life conversation that gives context to the episode that Rob and I will do next week, where we talk a little bit more about the research literature and what do you do if you're having some of these thoughts or if you're worried about someone who's having some of these thoughts. If a conversation about suicide sounds like it's just way too much to take on today, then go listen to something else and come back to the podcast in a couple weeks. Our intention is always for our conversations to be helpful. We'll trust you, the listener, to decide whether this is helpful to you at this time.
Welcome to the Zen Founder Podcast. I'm Rob, the founder.
And I'm Sherry, the clinical psychologist. And we've come together to help founders and their families stay sane while starting up.
Each week, we'll talk about different ways to work well, stay emotionally and physically healthy, and stay connected to the people that you care about.
How are you feeling about our topic today?
I really think it's good. I'm glad that you reached out to me. I really appreciate that. And I've been just really unsure of how or whether or not I would even talk about this, you know, publicly online. I've been very open about talking about it here locally, but I just really wasn't sure how to go about it in like the online space. So I think this would be good. And I've been wanting to talk about it too. So I think your show and talking to you would be a good place to do that. So
what are some of your hesitations?
The thing is, I'm very public in general about like the stuff that I'm working on and like my businesses and blogging and podcasting about that kind of stuff. I don't fold too much of my personal life into that. I guess my hesitation was just, I don't know how to bring up the subject or how to fold it in. Like I didn't want to just mention it as like a, by the way, this thing about Clint happened and kind of stick that in between blog posts about teaching how to market a product and things like that. That didn't really rub me the right way. And I didn't really just know how to present it. I did reach out to friends like online, like across the country, who I knew Clint. And like I sent them emails and told them about a month before Clint passed, Brad Tunar, another guy who goes to MicroConf, he and I organize a annual trip to Sugarbush, Vermont. And there are about 10 or 11 of us. And Clint was on that trip both years, this year and last year. So I reached out to that group. I think Mike Tabor was in that group as well. So I let them all know when it happened.
So you've had some more private conversations, but in terms of anything more broadly, it's tricky to know how to do that. And, you know, I was just reading Clint's blog this morning and everything is still up.
Yeah, that's the other thing is I was thinking at some point maybe I should arrange to like get into his websites and, I don't know, put something up. What I did do about, I guess it was like the week after he passed, I did get into his email list and I sent an email to his subscribers and I wrote a little something about him there.
It sounds hard because in these little ways become the public face of his death. You know, you're the one who's telling his subscribers and his online community, which is, I'm guessing, a role that you never expected to be in.
No, definitely not. Yeah, I mean, I kind of just had to do it. It was actually a weird situation that week because like his whole death was completely unexpected. It really totally came out of nowhere. And I know when these things happen, we always say, oh, it was such a shock, came out of nowhere. But like the thing was like Clint had so many things going on and like he had events that were coming up like in about a week after he passed, he was going to be speaking at an event here. And he had emails, he had like automated emails set up in his email system to go out and like, I think a day or two after he died, he had like an automated email go out of like him promoting this upcoming event. And there was a video of him speaking and things like that. So
he was making future plans.
He was making future plans, and he had like these automated emails going out. And once one of those came out, it was immediately apparent that somebody had to get into his email account and shut those down.
So you were on his list and are getting emails from him, even though he was deceased by that point.
Yeah. Yeah. And I was in touch with like his parents and everyone. And so I was able to get like the passwords to get in. Like I said, he was planning things, and you know, like he was very active, and like he was going to be writing a book this year. He was very big on doing speaking events. So he was doing a lot of that, a lot more blogging in recent months. So he was really active. I don't have a whole lot of experience with this kind of stuff, but to me, he didn't seem to fit any kind of profile of someone who's like depressed or has like given up on things and like, you know, just stopped caring about stuff. He very much cared about the things that he was working on, and he was actively like building things.
So some of those de facto signs that you think about, like somebody who's given up or quitting or severely depressed, those just weren't there for him, at least on the surface.
Right. Not that I knew. I think, you know, for me and everyone else around him, it was, when it happened, it was a complete shock, completely unexpected. I mean, I was literally, that day I was texting, I think I might've been the last person he was texting with, and I was supposed to help him move apartments. He was going to move to a different apartment. He was moving in with his girlfriend. That was the reason they were moving apartments. I was going to help him move furniture like that week, and things were going on, you know.
So tell me a little bit about who Clint was.
So I met Clint through a local meetup here in Connecticut. He and I both did some speaking at these local meetups around like WordPress and web design and marketing and that sort of thing. We met up that way. And then ever since then, we've been getting together like periodically for like lunch and dinners. He and I and another couple of friends of ours in this area, other like web developers, we would get together periodically, just kind of talk about work, talk about business, kind of talk shop and that sort of thing. And then, you know, we became friends, and like wives and girlfriends all kind of got together, you know, from time to time. And then about 2 years ago, Clint and I, at the time, I was starting to look to move out of working from home, and he was looking for a place to work. So we decided to share an office space together. And then a few months into that, this was about 2 years ago, he and I actually started to really go down the road of becoming business partners and starting a web agency together. And that was called Stacked Agency. And at the time, I was still doing a little bit of like client web design work. And we had just started, from working together in the same office, we just saw a lot of opportunity to do some work together. And that's kind of what led into this idea of starting an agency together. Unfortunately, or fortunately, I'm not really sure, but I about 2 months into that plan, I had to back out of that business partnership because I was so heavily involved in other things, you know, like building my startups and doing other things. And I was actually trying to ramp down the client work. So it just kind of didn't really make sense for me. So I kind of stepped out of it, and then he continued on building Stacked Agency. And that's what he did for, you know, like the next year and a half up until his death. And then over that year, it really did grow quite a bit. Like he really took off with Stacked Agency. I mean, he went from as a freelancer for Clint, he was taking on clients, you know, in like the $1,000 to $2,500 per project range. And at the time of his death, he was doing, you know, client projects in the $20,000-$30,000 range. And he was taking on more of them, and he was becoming very well known, especially in this local area in Fairfield, Connecticut, you know, doing a ton of speaking engagements, writing more, and that sort of thing. So it really started taking off. And then again, getting back to like things were actively going on. I mean, at the time of his death, he had something like 5 or 6 active client projects were Stacked going on, and he had a team in place. He had project managers and whatnot. So I knew him for about 4 years. So I didn't really know him a very long time, but I knew him in his last 4 years. And about 2 years ago, he and I moved into an office space. We've been sharing this office space that I'm in now.
So this is a guy who was really successful and growing and doing a lot of things.
Yeah. I mean, the other thing I should say about Clint is that he had a very unique backstory.
looked at his blog a little bit. It sounds like he's had several lives, you know, like just busy, full life.
Yes. And that's a very good way of putting it. And I often thought about it that way because he did have two phases of his life. Most of his life leading up until like mid-20s, he started getting very open about this stuff in the last 6 months. So I'm not really revealing a whole lot of new information here, but you know, he got into like drugs and alcohol pretty heavily. He had a bit of a criminal background, that kind of stuff. And then he actually completely cleaned up his life, got sober, became extremely healthy. I mean, if you look at any of his recent pictures, like he got very into like bodybuilding and health and nutrition and all that sort of stuff, really kind of staying sober in the last few years. And he kind of replaced all of his older habits with very much like business related habits. Like he really replaced a lot of his life with driving hard on business stuff and just growing things in that regard. And so I met him like around that turning point. So I kind of knew him in the recent years when he was really kind of cleaned up and really embracing the web design business and marketing business and replacing that with his kind of previous life.
Pouring sounds like a lot of energy into some really positive things, positive business things, health related things, writing, reaching out, speaking. So somebody who's really had a lot of energy and sounds like a vision of how he wanted to live his life at this point.
He wrote a lot about that. He blogged a lot about health and nutrition and also got very into like spirituality. I don't think he was very religious or anything, but he talked a lot about meditation and kind of mental health. And I know that in recent months, he was getting much more involved in the self-improvement kind of stuff and becoming that type of teacher and mentor to others. And I know as he started becoming very open about his story and about what he's been through and about how he's turned his life around, it's been like really inspiring to see how so many other people who've been going through those kind of things in their lives have been connecting with Clint and reaching out to Clint, and he's been kind of helping them through that. And I know he was planning on writing a book this year kind of about his turnaround in life. And in terms of his long-term goals, which we talked about all the time, like he and I would kind of have these conversations about being like advisors to one another, talking about goals and whatnot. You know, he talked a lot about how he wanted to move toward that sort of life of being like a kind of like a
motivational speaker, coach, yeah, kind of person.
Yep.
Yeah. It sounds like he did have a lot to give, which makes it so shocking that he took his own life. And you want to talk a little bit about that, like how you found out about that, your initial thoughts and feelings?
When it first happened, it was a total, complete shock. It was just really, as I said earlier, like it really came out of nowhere. And for the first week or two, I think like everyone else around just had a really hard time understanding it and why it happened and what could have possibly happened. Because like so many people were like, I just saw him yesterday, or I was just talking to him and things are going on. Like this really came out of nowhere. What kind of came to light a few weeks later after hearing from his parents and his brother, it turns out that he did have mental health issues. Like I certainly didn't know about, even people like as close as his girlfriend didn't really know about. I think only kind of his parents and brother kind of knew about his history of, I guess it would be like bipolar disorder. You know, a lot of that really did not really show on the surface. I knew him as a super, super positive guy and probably the most positive person you'd ever meet in every situation, even in like kind of stressful situations and whatnot. Like he'd always kind of look at the bright side. Until I heard that from his parents, which was about, you know, maybe like a week or two after his death, I mean, it didn't make any sense.
So that was the piece of information that helped it feel like it could even possibly be real.
Yeah, I think that at least helped me. And, you know, they kind of let this be known like on Facebook. So everyone who, I mean, there were like 300-400 people at his funeral. You know, it was crazy. There was a lot of people and outreach and messages on Facebook and whatnot. I think that information probably helped people get their heads around why or how things could come to this. I mean, for me personally, yeah, like when it happened, I didn't find him, but I was the second person to his apartment after it happened. Well, because what happened was he didn't show up for a conference call that morning. And then his mother and his girlfriend started texting me saying, you know, they haven't heard from him in about 24 or 48 hours. They asked me if I can check the office to see if he's there. I checked here. He wasn't here. And then went to his apartment and like EMT and police were already there and all that. So that was a very tough day. And then...
So you were at the scene.
I was at the scene, but I actually did not see his body. I only kind of got the news from the EMT people. So the first week or two, it, probably longer than that, it was, for me, it was very tough. I kind of looked to doing work as like a way to escape thinking about it and whatnot, but that was almost impossible. I mean, I'd go like hours at a time, just kind of like sitting in my desk, like literally doing nothing, just thinking.
Like trying to work, but not able to focus or be there.
Yeah, totally. Whether it was at work or driving or hanging out at home, it was very tough. And there were definitely some moments when it was, you know, this kind of thing is, it's just really hard to deal with. That was like the first 2 weeks or so, I think. So today it's been about 6 or 7 weeks. And so I think it's gotten a little bit better since then. I mean, I certainly still think about it. I know everyone else who's been close to him thinks about it quite a bit.
What's helped you as you are working through your grief?
After some time, I think working, just getting to work on my stuff does help me kind of escape that sort of stuff. I don't want to like minimize the significance of him and his passing to me. I know that like his girlfriend and his parents, I mean, I can't even begin to imagine what they've been going through. I mean, it's unthinkable, you know?
Yeah. I mean, there's certainly different levels of grief, and you're very close to Clint. You're texting with him that the day of his death, and you have a lot of history with him and a lot of shared time and like big discussions and those kinds of things.
Yeah, totally. I mean, it's been hard. I mean, like right now I'm sitting in the office that he and I have been sharing for the last year and a half. And over the past month, like his parents and some other people have been coming in and we've been like moving his stuff out. So I mean, like a lot of his stuff is actually still sitting here. So it's pretty,
right with you all the time.
Yeah. Like literally like looking at his stuff, and like, we've got like whiteboards on the wall with his handwriting on it and things like that. So it's, yeah, it's not easy to come in here every day, but I've been getting together with his girlfriend and with our other mutual friends in the area here. Like we had lunch, you know, last week, and I've been seeing his parents a couple of times since his passing. So
the community and bringing people together to be able to talk or just be in the same space together with the shared experience seems important.
Yeah. I had Clint on our podcast a few months back, and we talked about how he's like a local networking machine. and he really was. Like, he really knew everyone here in this local area. I'm way less connected here locally than he is. Like, he was the guy who knew everyone. And so, you know, so many people just kind of like reaching out, not only like attending his funeral, but reaching out with emails and messages on Facebook and whatnot. I guess because I sent that email to his list, some people who were on that list have been reaching out to me here and there. So I've been having a few conversations with some people who I know were just really impacted and inspired and helped by Clint sharing his story, you know, people who really kind of resonate and relate to what he's been talking about. So
how do you think this kind of death feels different than if he had been killed in a car accident or something? What seems to be happening in your head related to the fact that this was a suicide?
I don't have a whole lot of experience with this sort of thing. I mean, it was definitely hard for me to understand. I just compare it, you know, someone who's like so young and like one of my peers to be lost at this age. That's probably what has been impacting me most. I mean, I actually lost my grandfather only maybe like a month or two before Clint passed. And I mean, you know, I was very sad to see him go as well, but I mean, he was 90 years old. He lived a great life, and we kind of saw it coming.
Has a very different feeling.
Yeah, totally. I mean, Clint is part shock that it came out of nowhere, and then just the sadness is like, you know, this guy had so much going for him and so much ahead of him that it really, that's what really made it so sad. He was extremely dedicated and committed to just pushing and doing whatever needed to be done to just put the work in. Like, a big way that he would sell clients, you know, he's like, I'm going to work harder and more diligently than anyone else you'd ever speak to. And that was true, you know.
I'm wondering if there's anything that you would like to ask him or say to him if you had the chance.
I think I would have liked to ask him and just be more aware of what was really going on in his head. I know from speaking to his girlfriend, I know she very much questions things. And if he could have been more open about, as open as he was, like, he was very open about everything, especially his backstory and all, but there were definitely parts of him that he was just not very open about. And I guess looking back on it, you know, moments when he seemed so positive, there was really kind of something else going on underneath. I wish I would have been able to ask him about what was truly going on.
There were no big warning signs. There were no.
And there were times when I can see like the work was getting kind of draining for him. He drove himself very, very powerfully and very aggressively. I think September of 2014, he booked something like 26 speaking engagements in 30 days.
Oh my goodness.
But like he would do things like that where he would just really get really aggressive about booking as much work as possible or writing. Like he started working on a book. You know, he used to wake up at like 4 a.m. and has a whole morning routine of like meditation and planning out goals for the day, just very regimented, kind of committed to doing these things.
I mean, one of the things that you mentioned is the sense in which there may have been some deeper demons that he was fighting that he couldn't or didn't feel that he could talk about publicly or even with people like you, with pretty close friends. And I guess I just wonder about that as a common experience for founders who are selling themselves as being the hardest working or the most dedicated and determined and focused. And that's a lot of what drives success in the startup world and in many worlds. But it makes it very tricky to really be vulnerable or be open about parts of you that aren't working well or ways that you're struggling.
You know, I think the whole thing of entrepreneurship and being a founder, we put a lot of pressure on ourselves. I know I do. I have a 15-month-old daughter now, and more is at stake now than it was back in my 20s. Every decision that I make, you know, impacts that, impacts our security and impacts our future.
You carry the pressure of all of it.
Yeah. And, you know, I've been giving more thought about Clint lately. You know, that this whole thing of entrepreneurship and running his business, it was really growing aggressively in those last few months. You know, like he grew his team, he was getting bigger and bigger clients, he was getting more clients. And I think that kind of growth that was happening, now that I'm thinking about this now, it may have like, I don't know, like exacerbated his internal stuff that was going on, like in terms of like the extreme ups and downs.
This conversation about bipolar really reminds me of the fourth episode of the podcast in an interview I did with Greg about his experience with bipolar. And what was so interesting in that conversation is that there's some real ways that mania or hypomania, which is the up or the euphoric mood part of bipolar, there's some ways in which those symptoms lend themselves really well to startup life, to people who are founders. So I haven't seen any research about this, but I have kind of an anecdotal suspicion that there's a higher than normal rate of bipolar disorder in the founder and startup communities. It may have been too much, too fast.
Yeah. You know, I think that could have played into it. I mean, it's hard for me to really speculate on any of this.
And I don't think it's possible. You know, we can't really know exactly what he was thinking. There are things that we can sort of point to. And I think that's a common reaction when someone is lost in this way. There's a desire to sort of go back and try to do a posthumous psychoanalysis. Like what happened? What was he thinking? How can we put this together in a way that makes sense? And I think the bottom line is that there's no way to put the puzzle together in a way that makes sense. It's never a logical conclusion that you can look and say, oh, okay, now I really understand why he did that. That's suicide does not work that way. And I think that's one of the most painful parts about it.
Yeah, exactly. I personally realized that. I mean, as hard as it is to understand, and you do try to go back and think through these things, at the end of the day, there isn't going to be an answer. And you have to kind of just accept that. These are the things that I've been talking about with his girlfriend and other people and our friends here locally, you know, just kind of talking about how there isn't going to be an answer and there isn't going to be any kind of new information at this point.
You know, I think one reason to talk about this publicly and one reason I'm so glad you agreed to do so is so people can hear that this does happen and that some of our best and brightest founders are lost in this way. You know, the way you talk about him kind of reminds me of the story of Icarus and the intensity and euphoria of flying, but flying too close to the sun was kind of his ultimate undoing in the myth. I think it's a reminder to be careful and kind of watch each other and take care of each other as much as we can, and to be aware in our own selves that when past mingles with the present pressure in a way that begins to feel really overwhelming, then you know, it's time to do something or get help or stop or take a break.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I know that a lot of us have this like online persona and then like an offline persona or like things that we share online and things that we just don't really share so much online. And it's easy for people to kind of draw conclusions about other people based on the things that they're talking about or their accomplishments or the things that you see them building and launching and doing all these things. There's always a much deeper story going on at home for that person. Everyone has stuff going on.
I think you want to have a life and a self that's richer and deeper than your website. I mean, there's just only so much information that can be on your podcast or your blog. If that's the fullness of who you are, it's a pretty thin self.
Yep.
It may not be the most satisfying existence. But I think there's so much pressure to be this presence online that it's easy to get inflated and sort of be bigger than life. And then if you get too inflated, your like normal walking around life may seem less interesting to you.
Yeah, it's just a really weird thing to balance in time.
I mean, it is sort of like celebrity, you know, you're celebrities in a certain world, but you have this like very public experience.
Oh, it very much is, you know, and I'm sure you and Rob kind of deal with this quite a bit now, is like people listening into the podcast and they kind of know all these things about you, but you don't necessarily know anything about them.
It's not a real relationship. It's not reciprocal.
Yeah.
And I think folks who are really driven to create a big online following can get used to those non-reciprocal relationships, those one-way relationships. And I think if unchecked, can sort of forget how to have a real close, intimate relationship where your yucky, unfiltered, unpolished stuff is okay and is accepted.
These days we're very like digital in the way that we communicate, whether it's over email or Twitter or comments on a blog and whatnot. I've been trying to make an effort to kind of like elevate the relationship that I have with people online by just sending them like private emails and trying to do that as much as possible. Just kind of reaching out, be like, hey, what are you working on? What are you up to? Or ask them for feedback on something that I'm working through. You know, even if you've only had like a couple of interactions with them on Twitter, I think it's important to kind of reach out to people and stay in touch.
To have more real conversations than the 140 character conversations.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, is there anything else that you'd like to say about Clint or about how you're processing this?
I guess the thing that I really want to take away is like anyone who got to know Clint at all, anyone who ever knows him and hears him speak or meets him in person, just everyone always comes away being completely inspired and like motivated to make some kind of change or level things up in their lives somehow, whether it's, you know, becoming healthier or being more productive. I mean, he certainly inspired me in many of those ways, for sure, over the last couple of years, especially in the last year. I guess what I'm saying is you can head over to clintwarren.com. His blog is still up, a lot of his writing, and he did a lot more writing in his last few months. And those articles are really worth going through. I think that's really important. And if you did know Clint, or even if just reading any of his writing kind of resonates with you, I know that you can send an email to clint@stackedagency.com. And I know that his parents have access to that and they've been receiving messages from people. So if you ever want to like share anything about how you resonate with anything that Clint was doing, you know, I know that his parents would love to see that as well.
I love what you said, Brian, because it just honors the life that he had and doesn't let his death overshadow the way that he lived and the gifts that he gave to the people around him. And I think that's so important, that his loss doesn't undo any of the goodness or beauty of his life. From Rob and I, we're just very sorry that you're walking through this and sorry that he was lost in this way. And so want to extend that to you and to his family and your community there in Connecticut.
Thank you. Appreciate that. And I really do appreciate inviting me on today to talk about this. Like I said, I've been a little unsure how or where to share this stuff online. And I think your podcast here is a good place for this. And I think what you and Rob have been doing with Zen Founder has been a much needed, it's really has filled like a much needed gap in this community and this conversation. And I think it's great. So, you know, thanks for having me on and keep doing what you guys are doing.
Thanks. If you were moved by our conversation and you would like to send a message to Brian, you can do that at castjam.com. And if you would like to reach out to Clint's family with some words of kindness, you can find contact information at clintwarren.com. You will also see the recent articles on his blog are still up on his website, so feel free to check those out as well. As I mentioned in the intro, this episode is part of a two-part series. So Rob and I will be back next week addressing this topic from a little bit of a different perspective. And we look forward to your questions and comments. As always, you can get in touch with us at questions@zenfounder.com. Thanks for tuning in. Take care.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Zen Founder.
We'll be back next week with another conversation about how to enjoy a little bit more Zen in your startup life.